Powered by Rev Media in partnership with TSN, it is Season 5, Episode 71, a playoff edition of the Rain Dregs Hockey Podcast presented by our title sponsor, Canadian Club Whiskey. Have you tried the Canadian Club Ginger Ale? It's a crisp, refreshing alternative to beer. It's well-balanced with the flavors of ginger, subtle notes of rye and spice. Jason Strudwick, it is delicious. Ray, we're changing things up in this edition, okay? I hope. Yeah, I know. This is like a management decision, and I didn't make it. It was basically made by Ryan Rashog. In the spirit of the conference finals, we've learned to expect the unexpected, both sides here. So headlines are coming up. But first, we're pleased to welcome in Jason Strudwick to Ray and Driggs. And you see him about 11 times per week on Got Your Back. Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and O-Dog. And I'm pretty sure, Ray, if Oprah still had a show, Jason Strudwick would be there on occasion.
Canada's guest.
Welcome, Struddy. How are you?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to bring some star power to your pod, guys. I know it's been difficult to get big guests, so I carved out 20 minutes for you guys this morning.
Oh, we're looking for somebody hard off the glass and out, Struddy. It's a living. It's a living.
All right, well, let's dive into game four last night. And just the series has been kind of strange. I guess you could say that about the East and the West. But 5.5 minutes in, it's 2-0 Dallas, Strudy. Does the early lead in that scenario just kind of wake the other team up? Why does it so often flip like that?
You know, it's interesting because both teams have been through quite a bit in the past. They've already won some series. They've had some heartbreak through the playoffs in the Western Conference. And, you know, as I was sitting there watching last night, I thought the Oilers came out really tentative, almost nervous. Their feet weren't moving. And then Dallas gets a couple kind of lucky breaks. You know, it's unfair, I think, at times to say that, but I would say they were somewhat lucky goals. So I think after those two goals broke, they're like, screw it. You know, how much worse can things go? You know, we're already down 2-0. And they found their legs. They started skating. Mm-hmm. They started getting on the forecheck. And what I really liked what they did is they started kind of doing what Dallas did to them in game three, was play below the tops of circles, below the goal line, hanging on to pucks, making Dallas D work. And it started working for them. They start getting back into this game. So, you know, it doesn't feel like any lead is safe in any game with the star power through both lineups. But the challenge for whoever wins the series is the person that can hold that high level of play longer throughout a stretch of games.
Isn't it weird, eh? Like you said, like they look tight. I'm doing the Florida Rangers series, the first period of game four. The Rangers were awesome, and Florida just didn't have it. And Paul Maurice said, yeah, we are tight. He's like, we just need to lose that and just play. Like, we played. Like, shouldn't you just be able to, like, doesn't it seem weird? Like, why are you tight and then not tight? Like, why can't you have that mindset of just play? But it just doesn't seem to happen, does it? It's like, it's way harder than just saying it, isn't it?
Well, and fans, they, you know, I was in the room or in the rink last night, and people are just yelling for them to get going and skate, and I get it. But I think for both Florida and Oilers, it was a must-win situation. You know, you lose that game, and you're probably right. Not going to the finals. So you start out tentative, and maybe you're waiting a little bit for something bad to happen. Well, in the case of the Oilers, it did go. It went really badly. But then you start playing, you start unlocking your game. And I think that's, you know, just to feel that flow and to get going. I think that's the hardest thing in those tight situations. Just play and fall back on what you are, right? What do I do well? And, you know, look at a guy like Darnell Nurse who'd had a bit of a tough, you know, series, I think, and not doing what we, you know, people expect him to do. I thought last time he got back to who he was, just simple plays, physical and intimidating. He did that to the tune of over 12 hits last night. And when you do that, you become what you are to a core. That is what I do, what I'm my best. And I think that makes the game easier and it flows from you.
What was that day all about for Darnell? I mean, it starts in the morning.
Man, it seemed like an avalanche.
Like it looked and sounded like, I mean, there's a player who did not want to do his media in the morning. He just wanted to focus on prepping for his game. He knew what his challenge was to get back on track. And okay, give him credit here. That was the response required. But that day did not seem to start well, did it, for Darnell Nurse?
Well, I think you go back to the end of the last game, right, where that goal is on Skinner and he's in front and there is some people pushing that he should have played it differently. I'm like, Robertson's nearly below the goal line. You're not going to vacate the front of the net to go take that guy away. So, I mean, and then unfortunately, the puck goes in off, you know, the way that Skinner did. So then he hears a lot of it. There's a couple media pieces that were really, I thought, really rough on him and quite honestly unfair. Mm-hmm. And so he sees that and he's pissed off. So he comes in the next morning, gives it to Marshawn Lynch. You know, I'm just here to answer the question or whatever it is, you know, or five questions. And he's fired up. And I actually think it was a good thing for him because he had an edge to his game. Hmm. And he's a skilled guy. He covers a lot of ground. But when he is physical, and we've seen it in previous playoff years, that's why I know he has this gear in him. When he is physical, he is a leader and doing things that other people can't do. He can't skate like Heskinen, but he's pretty damn close. Really damn close to him, and he covers space, but Heiskanen can't be that intimidating presence. And if this is what it took to get Nurse to be like that for the rest of the series and what they hope will be another one, I think it's a major upgrade. Because you look on the other side, Tanev's out or could be out with what looks like a foot injury.
Yeah.
That's a major swing. One of your D-men goes way up in his way he plays, another one drops out. That's a major swing to the other side.
That if Tanev is indeed out, like, that's a major loss.
Huge.
Like, just look at what he's done over the, you know, over the playoffs. He's matched with the best player as much as he can most of the time, and he's done an amazing job. That'd be a huge loss. Stretti, I want to ask you about Chris Knobloch, because most people wouldn't know much about him, even though he's had a long career coaching and, you know, through college and then into the amateur ranks. He was an assistant in Philadelphia for a bit. And he's always been kind of thought of as the next really good coach. But when you meet him, he's like so quiet and so level and so, I don't know, unassuming. Yet he's made some big swings with his lineups. And like, that is incredibly courageous, in my opinion, to switch goalies in the middle of a series like he did against Vancouver. Drop Corey Perry out of the lineup, bring Perry back, drop McLeod out, bring McLeod back. Like, did you know much about Chris before he started? And I've been impressed from a distance just in the, just in the way he deals with a pretty volatile team, because it's volatile because it's, as they said, it's cup or bust. So it's like, it's not like there's a short road there.
Well, the season was in major jeopardy when he jumps in there. And he just calmly, you know, just kind of brings guys back to normal. And one of the first things he said is that he said to Connor Leon, you know, you guys don't have to do it all yourself. We have other people. And he started giving other people ice time and other people responsibility. And you can look at the bottom six, the way they've embraced the role of penalty killers. There's no reason to have Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid kill penalties, because they play enough 5-on-5. They play enough on the power play. And when they do kill penalties, the other guys are just sitting there saying, hey, have a good game, guys. I'll be here for my 4 minutes. And I've played four minutes before. You do nothing. They could take someone off the street and put them on the bench, and you can play 4 minutes. And it's even Ryan Rashad could play 4 minutes and still produce at the NHL level. Probably a bit too much. That's a bit too much. But he has been so calm, and so he's got everyone to feel like they have a part of this team and a role, which is really exciting. And now you get to the playoffs, and I think what people are forgetting, this is a rookie coach going against guys that are well-versed in playoff hockey. And he has shown such big balls to make some of these calls at key moments. Now, they proved to be right. And, you know, you think about bringing Perry back. I think that was a nice touch. This game has really kind of worked to be now below the circles, along the wall kind of series. Corey Perry, he's greasy. He's a greasy guy. And to put him with Leon, that makes a lot of sense. Leon understands how to play with Corey Perry. Ryan McLeod at center and Fogel, they don't know how to use Corey Perry's strengths. You can't ask him to get into a track meet. That's not what Corey Perry is, right? That's like trying to ask Ray Ferraro to dunk a ball. Like, it's not happening. So what you do is you...
Oh, you should see the apps now. I'm working on them, Strutty. I'm working on them, big boy.
So you put people in positions for success. So that line rolled out and warm, but I looked out, I was like, wow, that is a big set. So rookie coach with a fairly, I think, deep team, deeper than people expect, and giving people roles. He's done a good job. And the best part about him, when he's on the bench, half the time I think he's leaning over asking Paul Coffey if he got the Wordle today. He's like, did you get that Wordle? I got it in three. Did you see it? Like, he's so calm, man. It's crazy.
Yeah. I call it, I think he's got a little bit like Jared Bednar in Colorado. They've got that farmer calmness to them.
Yeah.
Because they both did come off the farm, right? Yeah. And like it's just like they just work and it's the next step and it's not too far down the road. Yeah. And I've been really impressed. And one of the biggest moves he made, I thought, because it had to be made at the time, but you still have to do it, was when he took Skinner out of the net in games 4 and 5 against Vancouver, and Pickard did the job, and then he went back to Skinner for 6. That is a disaster waiting to happen, but the courage to do it and then get the results from it. And now that gets us back to here. We're 2-2. Skinner's had some moments where you're like, oh boy, he's on roller skates in there. And then other times where he makes huge saves, like he did last night. He made 2 of them with his right pad that he had to have, or that game could have gone another way. You're a D. Your goalie's struggling, and he makes a good save. Like, does it feel like a little bit of a mixed bag back there, or are you just worried about your own thing?
Yeah, just one more point on Oblak. I think it took him 6 games to get the lines right to beat the Canucks the other night, last series. You look at he had the big guys together in game 2 and 3, and that was a mistake. And he got it figured out. So I think, he's now we're getting to game 5. I think he's probably starting to understand the line combinations needed to have success. As far as Skinner, he's had some up and down moments. And as a D man, it's a little bit scary when you're uncertain of what's going to go on. But I think this is now 2 years of Skinner, right? They know what he can do. And Connor McDavid said it. He rebounds. This guy, I think he used the word, he's a gamer. He rebounds. Because Skinner wasn't supposed to be this guy. They signed a guy named Jack Campbell out of the Maple Leafs to be the guy. And also Skinner's the guy. He's like, what? I'm the starting goalie. So I think that the longer this goes on, the more Skinner's going to just continue to feel comfortable and figure it out. Because he has made some massive, massive saves at key times. But now it's a little bit different. You look at last night, the first time I think there's been more than a 1-goal difference in the game, and they got to Ottinger. They put 4 in behind Ottinger. So I think that swings a little bit now. The shooter's order is like, hey, we're starting to understand first how the lines combination should work to have success against this team and how to beat Ottinger. And maybe that just calms things down for Skinner, who got a big win at home to tie this bad boy up.
The Oilers score a real nice shorthanded goal. I want an opinion from both of you. I mean, how do you explain, Ray? I'll start with you. There are good penalty kills, and then there's what we're seeing from the Edmonton Oilers in this playoff.
Yeah, ridiculous. Crazy.
How do you explain it? Is it puck possession? Is it just aggressiveness? Like, what are you seeing there?
I think the biggest change over that we've seen in penalty killing of late, the last couple of years, is as they've started to get more aggressive. And they've started to be able, in particular during a series, because you see the same power play over and over, the coaching really matters. The instruction matters. The ability to execute what the coach wants, like what the system is supposed to be. Again, I'm doing that other series. These penalty kills, they do not stay in the same place ever. And I hated being against an aggressive penalty kill because you have no time to think. You have no time to make a read. And when I watch the Oilers, Strutty, I'll throw this to you, but like they are all over it. But it's not like running around with your hair on fire. It's like their timing is about perfect. One guy pinches on the wall. Next guy goes to the low guy. Next guy, they know where the next option is. They're already taking the next option away. I think coaching and adjustments on the penalty kill have been among the biggest changes in the game, I think, in the last couple of years.
Well, let's give credit to the guy who runs it, Mark Stewart, right? Former NHLer, was kind of the eye in the sky. Now he's, running, if not the most important part of the Oilers game, it's right up there with how important the penalty kill is. Confidence, though. Confidence is number one. Believing in what the coach is telling you and then believing each other to do the job. So what the Oilers do is they cut the ice in half and they do not allow the other team's D to get to middle of the ice or whoever's running the top of the umbrella. And they push that guy down the wall. You've got to give up shots from somewhere. I would rather give them from the side where the goalie is feeling comfortable and maybe the D-man can block it. And then, as Ray pointed out, when it goes down, they jump, they push him. Another guy comes in, the D-man squeezes. Now you got a small little game. Instead of having the whole offensive zone, now they're squeezing to a little, you know, pile of turds in the corner, and then they're usually winning or trying to win that puck battle, killing time, then icing it down. Yep. It's just an absolute clinic. You can tell when they jump over, they're like, yeah, we got this. And that is a good feeling because I've been on penalty kills where you do not feel confident, where you are just praying that, you know, something happens and maybe the other team takes a penalty. But these guys are going
over. It is
over.
Brutal. Isn't it, Strutty? Isn't it brutal?
It's a sick feeling.
You take a penalty and you're like, oh my God, the next time we're going to get the puck is when it's in our net.
Yeah, I'm not getting comfortable in the penalty box because I'll be right out of this thing. Like, don't close the door. I'll be right back out of here. But it's just sick.
Just leave it open.
But now it's like they embrace it. And I go back to my previous comment. There are specific players who do it, and it is the bottom six. It's not Leon. It's not Connor. It's not Hyman. It's, you know, the unsung hero Derek Ryan, Janmark, Connor Brown. You know, this guy signed a big deal to Oilers and has been had a really tough year. Now I think he has points in three or four games, including a massive play last night. And like he, these are the guys at this time of year you look to, right? You think of the Fernando Pizzani's like out of nowhere scoring all those goals. Yeah. It's I think, you know, empowering your bottom six and give them a role and give them a good job, it just helps so much because these guys are just like, we'll do it.
Yeah. Well, Ray and I will take you through the Eastern Conference Final as part of headlines on Ray and Dregs coming up here. But before we let you go, Strutty, and both of you here, shouldn't be any surprises in either conference. But since we focused in this segment on the West, shouldn't be any surprises. So what do we expect to see from the Dallas Stars back in Texas on Friday?
Well, they're a good team.
Well, I'm going to start and say if Tanev can't play.
Yeah.
This is like the door has just crept open for the Oilers. And the reason being they'd like to have Hakanpaa back there. They don't. He's big and he can lean on people. Now you take out their top shutdown guy. That means guys have to play minutes that they don't normally play. Like I think it is people will look at it if they're not really in tune and say, oh yeah, the Dallas lost Tanev, and then they'll move past it. But I think the door just slid open here for Edmonton if he can't play.
Well, Heiskanen played almost 28 minutes last night.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would expect he'd be – I bet you he's north of 32, 33 minutes in the next
He's game. A young Strudwick the way he skates.
You don't – that's not quite as deep. Not as deep a stride, right? And not the knee benders in there. The knee benders is in there. But you know, I think you're right. And so now you're moving up Suter, who played 19 minutes last night. He's probably going to play above that. So if I'm the Oilers, I'm leaning on Suter and I'm leaning on Heiskanen every single time you get on the ice. And this could take seven. But just listen, the Stars are a good team. I think they go home. They're going to feel good about themselves, about where things are at, and what they can do in the best of three. But the Oilers have to go after those two D-men because you're right. You know, it's going to be Petrovic and then I guess Lundqvist or maybe that's the guy.
Yeah, and when he played, he was averaging about five minutes a game.
Yeah, that's the Ryan Rashad like minutes. So that's pretty rough, right? So basically they're going to play. He's not going to play. They'll have five. Petrovic at home will play more, but it's going to be – we got a whole new series now. And on both sides, honestly, it'll be fun to watch.
You bet. All right, great stuff. Jason Strudwick, our guest.
Thanks for getting up, Strudy. Go do whatever the hell it is you do at home. You know?
Another interview in 10 minutes. See you guys later.
All right, attaboy, buddy. Attaboy. Thanks, Strudy. good stuff. Our interviews on Ray and Dregs brought to us by Canadian Club 1858 Original, the flagship whiskey for Canadian Club. It's really where it all began, aged over 3 years in oak barrels before being bottled. And you know the end result, the smoothest possible flavor. That is Canadian Club 1858. All right, we didn't focus on the East. We're going to do that here, Ray. The Eastern Conference Final with the Florida Panthers and the New York Rangers. It is game 5 at MSG Time for headlines brought to you by Tim Hortons. Two new sparkling quenchers have now hit the summer menu. Mango star fruit with a beautiful blend of tropical flavors and wild berry hibiscus with fruity and floral notes. Summertime refreshing beverages perfect to beat the heat this summer at Tim Hortons. All right, Ray. Pivotal game series is tied at 2 as we go into game 5. There's a sense, and you're right there. I mean, your ice level between the benches, there's a sense that Florida has largely been the better team despite the series being deadlocked. Would you agree with that, or is that maybe a hint of an exaggeration?
Yeah, it's not a sense, and it's not an exaggeration.
It's real.
It's the way it's been. If Igor Shesterkin is not in the net for the Rangers and playing at the level he is, the series is at least 3-1. Like games 3 in Florida, 4 down in Florida. The Rangers had two good periods. The first period of game 4, the second period of game 2, of game 3 rather. The shots, the shot attempts, the chances are so heavily weighed in Florida's favor the other 4 periods. Like it's not even close. Florida has got this style of play that when you watch it, you can really appreciate it. And it's part of it is they just wear teams out. By the time the third period rolls around, teams don't have anything. I'm just going to grab this thing because I'll get the numbers wrong. Yeah. So Florida's goals for in the playoffs, they've got 50 of them. They've got 9 in the first period. They got 18 in the second period. They've got 21 in the third.
Mm-hmm.
And then they've got 2 overtime goals. Like they just get better and better and better. And the Rangers' problem has been they have not been able to have enough sustained pressure in the offensive zone, like zone time, that Florida ever slows down. And so like the puck goes in, the puck comes out. The Rangers can score. They don't need many chances. But it has been really impressive. And all that aside, it's 2-2.
I know.
It doesn't matter. So like this game here is, I guess it can always be different, but this is the whole series for the Rangers. Mm-hmm. Like if they don't win game 5, I don't see them being able to win. I mean, of course they can go to Florida and win. They've already done
it.
But it would seem like if the Rangers lose game 5, there's a little blood in the water and the Panthers would take care of it on home ice.
Right.
That's what it feels like. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, look, this time of year is always about the matchups, and maybe it's an easy media line where we can zero in on, okay, well, we can see what Barkov and Reinhardt are doing, and we can see what Kreider and Zibanejad aren't doing, statistically speaking.
Right.
Right? But is it that easy? Is it that easy? I mean, obviously, if the New York Rangers are going to advance to the Stanley Cup final, Chris Kreider and Mika Zibanejad are going to have to find a way, correct?
They have been non-factors.
Yeah.
The only way they've been a factor is Zibanejad turned the puck over in overtime. Wheeler took all kinds of heat for it, but Zibanejad laid a grenade at him, and he's not going to catch Barkov. So as you talk about those top two lines, Barkov, Reinhardt, and Verhaeghe have 7 goals in the season in the series. They got put together in game 3 in the third period. Mm-hmm. And they have 7 goals in the series. Jeez. Kreider, Zibanejad, Roslovic, or Kakko, or whoever else has played there, they have 0.
Yeah.
So, no, it's not just – it's never one thing. Like, I am – more certain of this than almost anything as I watch games and do this stuff over the years is it's never just one thing.
Right.
There's several reasons that the Panthers have carried a lot of the play, but one of them is the top lines at 7-0
mm-hmm.
in goals. And the Rangers can't withstand that over a 7-game series. Kreider had a hat trick in game 6 against Carolina, mm-hmm. knocked them out. And for 4 games has been really quiet. I did think the best line of the series so far from a player was Matthew Tkachuk after game 4 when Kreider ripped the mouth guard out of his mouth. You know, Kachuk's always got that thing hanging out of his mouth, and he ripped it out of his mouth. He tried to throw it over the glass, but it's a good thing he didn't, because that's a game misconduct, if you can believe that.
Just to interject, would it automatically have been a game misconduct?
Apparently so. Wow. I have never heard of this rule. I don't know why. But anyway, it stuck on his glove, and Kachuk said he washed it off and just stuck it back in his mouth. And he said he told Kreider that's the best play he made all game. And I think it's a hell of a line. It's a hell of a line.
Yeah.
But you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if, like, I'd put it this way. I'd be shocked if the game isn't close. This is three straight overtime games.
I know. Yeah.
So again, whatever the numbers are telling us, at the end, it really doesn't matter, apparently, in this series. Yeah. And most of the reason is Shesterkin is a brilliant goaltender. Yeah.
So I'm not going to ask you to disclose anything confidential. That's not what you do. And you see a lot and you hear a lot in between benches. And there wouldn't be many players in either conference final here that don't have something, right? Like, I mean, it's just the wear and tear of the playoffs to this point. But are you noticing anything? Like, you know, it's pretty clear that Sam Bennett's got something going on, right?
He doesn't take any face-offs, you know, so
that's pretty.
I'm guessing it's a hand.
That's a flag,
or something.
Yeah, there's talk or Trocheck. I mean, so I shouldn't even mention those players other than Bennett, of course, because it's so obvious he's not taking the draws. But are you seeing anything out there that would suggest that, I mean, both sides are just dinged up here?
Well, the first guy that pops up is Adam Fox.
Right.
In game four against Washington, he got hit by Nick Jensen, and it was a bit of a knee-to-knee hit. Mm. And, it was. He didn't practice in the gap between didn't practice much between the Florida series and the Carolina series. He's been at I noticed in the Carolina series he's got a little bit of limited mobility, like as far as rushing up the ice and coming back.
Yeah.
But I thought the last couple of games he's looked much more engaged, like much more willing. Mm-hmm. To put himself in a position where he had to skate back, as opposed to the safe stuff. As for Trocheck, so Fox would be the one guy. Bennett is obvious, you know, because he's not taking any face-offs. If Trocheck's hurt, more guys should be hurt, because man, that guy's just
so good.
He's been so good for them. He is the catalyst of their team. Mm-hmm. Right now, he really is. Mm. Like, everything is the energy that he provides, the relentlessness that he plays with. He's at the peak of his game right now.
Mm. All right, former Carolina Hurricane, and I do want to get to a story that's evolving in Carolina in just a moment. But biggest surprise for you in the playoffs, if there is one, you know, maybe Alexei Lafreniere and his coming out party that is evident in the East. Is it Hyman with 13 goals? Is it Wyatt Johnson with an absolute beauty again last night to open the scoring for Dallas? Is it Evan Bouchard and everything that he continues to contribute? Is there one guy that jumps off the page or not really?
Well, when you said Lafreniere, I was like, oh, yeah, it's him. And then you mentioned three other guys, and I'm like, oh, yeah, it's him too. And it's like, this is... Those four guys you mentioned are having impactful playoffs, not just one round.
Right.
Right? Like, it's round after round. Now, I had this thought, and I don't know if it's out in left field, so I'm going to ask you, and please tell me if it is, about Lafreniere. So, while not quite as big, he's a big guy.
Yeah, he is.
Lafreniere. Yeah. He's got good size. His ability to take the puck at that size and confidently rush it and carry it and drive the net, starting to remind me a little bit of Val Nichushkin.
Interesting.
Is that out to lunch or
not? No. I think assuming he can sustain his level of play, and this is a career turning point for him, he hasn't been bad. He's just it's been a slow evolution.
Been a kid.
Right?
He's a kid. Yeah. He's 22, man.
Oh, man. I'm buying it. I'm buying that.
Because you got to remember when Nichushkin came out of, you know, out of the draft, in short order, he ended up back in Russia. He had no goals and no penalties in 1 year. Yeah. Like, how does that even happen?
It's hard.
So, and I mean, his troubles aside, I mean, that'll be what it's going to be. The future will tell us about that. But just the power of in Lafreniere's game, he'd be the one guy, I think, he and Bouchard, I think, that have taken their games from a pretty good level to, you know, to a level you've got to stand up and look at and go, wow, these are emerging stars.
Yeah. Okay, here, we will wrap up headlines with just a thought on the Hurricanes, because there's more and more percolating around Marty Natchez and the possibility of trade, right? And, you know, we know that he's asked out probably more than once, to be fair. You know, he's got some contract issues moving forward. And there's some family influence. His dad has been pretty vocal with his discontent of how he's being utilized in Carolina.
Yeah. Hey, Dad, just watch the game. That's my first point of this whole thing. Dad, just watch the game.
Okay, so now analyze the player for us, because there will be no shortage of suitors for Natchez. The Montreal Canadiens, I believe, are right up there with a level of interest. So where would you be as a general manager if you knew that name was a name in play?
Okay, I'd want to talk to my coaches too, aside from my scouts, who are going to give me their detailed reports on him, because they've watched him not once, but multiple times. I'd want to know from my coaches, what do you see from him and what is a plan for him? Mm-hmm. This kid is a electric puck transporter. When he gets the puck on his stick and he's got room, it's really like he's exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
He can finish. He can shoot. He can make a play. He's got good size. And there is a level of inconsistency to him that leaves you wanting most games. So I want to know from the coaches, what's the plan that we could help him be a more consistent player? Because I think some of it is immaturity, like age. He's still a young guy.
Yeah.
He's a really young guy, but I really think quite highly of him. I think he should be a 70 plus point guy.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, he can score, he can shoot. And he's been frustrating for Carolina, because a player of that ability should not play on all four lines on your team.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening.
It does make some sense, too. And I'm connecting him to Montreal. I'm not saying it's going to go down. It's just that's the type of piece that you would expect Kent Hughes would want to add, right? Because the rebuild is over. It needs to be over in Montreal. They've got to turn that corner and at least nibble at an Eastern Conference playoff spot as early as next season. Otherwise, the market in Montreal, as you know well, Ray, the fan base is going to turn. They're going to go, okay, enough of this. And, you know.
Well, but yeah, it's the type of move where you start to offload some of your future capital for something closer to today.
Right.
But let's look at how, you know, if Montreal goes in, who comes out of the playoffs?
Yeah.
Like you have to start looking at like this. And Detroit would think they're a team that's going to go in.
Ottawa,
or
Buffalo.
Be in that mix. So like all of a sudden teams have to fall out. It's hard to make that step. Yeah. And Montreal to me feels like a half step behind the contenders, like for the playoffs.
Right.
Like at this point, that's what they feel like to me.
No, that's fair. That's fair. All right, buddy. Those are your headlines. Thank you to our good friends at Tim Hortons.
Canadian summers just hit different with Tim's. I know it's up. Introducing two new sparkling quenchers made with natural flavors and colors. Memories are made with quenchers. It's time for
Tim's. We know where you are. You're in New York City getting ready for the big match tonight. And then what? You just continue to follow this thing through until...
Yeah, I got booked my flight. Booked my flight's back for game 6. And then I just sent to travel. If it series is over in 6, I'm going home. If it's continuing. I'm going back to New York, but then I need a flight to Vancouver. It's been a morning of travel so far. And now I can get into the game. Now that we're finished our thing. And eventually I'm going to get home by the 4th of June for sure.
Uh-huh. And then the quick turnaround, right?
Well, I think the next round starts the 8th. Mm-hmm.
That's the plan. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, then they better not be changing plans. I'd like to at least get home and,
all right,
you know.
Bold prediction.
I'll get home. See me.
Bold prediction tonight. What do you think?
I have none.
Yeah.
I've been wrong three
predictions
games in
are for losers. So, I'm in that camp with you. Yeah.
You know what? I used to think Big Bob McKenzie was such a wuss. He'd never make predictions. Yeah. Now I'm like, Bob was right. The Bob father was right again.
Masterful at it.
By the way, masterful. And give an opinion without without a prediction, he was fantastic.
Best ever.
I have had a few meals with Sean,
okay,
Bob's son. And I will say, the quality of Sean's restaurants that he selects, the variety.
Interesting.
He's outkicked dad.
Oh.
It's not even. Oh, yeah. And Bob likes a good meal.
And into the wine,
Sean,
too.
Sean,
like,
is
Sean
very
knows
good.
His wine.
Oh, yeah. They hand the wine list. You just hand it over.
Yeah. What do you feel?
What do I know? I have no idea. So
good for you. All right. Well, enjoy the wine.
It's been fun.
Enjoy
what do you got? What do you got? A little more lawn mowing?
No. You know what? Because, like, we're focused on the Western Conference Final, primarily on the Western Conference Final in studio. So tonight is an off night. I get to watch the Eastern Conference Game 5. So I'm putting something on the smoker today. I just haven't quite decided. Ooh,
but you don't know what yet?
It's not going to be extravagant.
What are you going to go?
Because, you know, when you're doing a big cut of meat, you got to get going. And it's already 9:37 a.m. Eastern. So if you were doing something substantial, it'll be chicken wings or drumsticks or something. Just easy.
But this is your part of the season here, isn't it, though?
I got my bird feeder set up, Ray. I'm like a 90-year-old dude. I appreciate the birds coming in at the feeder. It's right near the smoker. I got the smoker going, you know.
Do you have like a smoking jacket and like a pipe?
No, I don't have that, but I do have the Canadian Club ginger ale nearby.
Yes, you better have it. This is the time of the season when it is at the top shelf at my house.
All right, buddy. Well, good luck in Game 5, and then safe travels, and we'll map out the next episode for early next week. How's that?
Yeah, you bet. Everybody have a great weekend. Keep enjoying these playoffs. They've been awesome, and hope everybody's well. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks, Dregs.
Thank you to our sponsors who continue to support Ray and Dregs, our title sponsor, Canadian Club Whiskey, and Tim Hortons. That's another episode of the Ray and Dregs Hockey Podcast. Until next time, stay safe, everyone.